This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Tom Joslin, Bill Raja. They keep the Long War Journal. They are also the podcasters of Generation Jihad, where they discuss, and often with their colleagues and guests, the changing face of the jihadists across a vast landscape, the Mediterranean to the Hindu Kush. Right now we're looking at Afghanistan because it's going through severe changes since the last 20 years of an economy that was being guided and supported by the U.S. and its allies with subsidies and with investment. That economy has now gone away. You can all imagine what your economy in your local area would look like if the electricity and the water and the gas and the salaries disappeared overnight. And then you had to make arrangements with new people, new bosses, whose direction is not about prosperity, but is about obedience. Tom, I come to you because Bill mentions that one or all of the new commanders he's profiled, his job is to seek out the Islamic State, sometimes called by those who are fresh to this reporting, ISKP, Islamic State Khorasan Province. I remember when Bill first reported on the Khorasan Province and there was a photograph of young people stringing a banner that looked extremely bought at Targets that said Khorasan Province, but it's considerably more than. There was that incident where the U.S. dropped a super bomb said to be targeting the Islamic State. What is its status in Afghanistan, Bill? I mean, Tom. And we have this fresh report from the Wall Street Journal. Killings of Islamic State militants highlight power struggle with Afghanistan's Taliban. What does that power struggle look like, Tom?
Well, ever since the ISIS branch entered the region in 2014, it's opposed to Taliban's rule. It's opposed to Taliban's Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. In the ISIS scheme, they supposedly represent the caliphate, and wherever the caliphate goes, even though they've lost the territorial caliphate in Syria and Iraq, anywhere the caliphate goes, including Afghanistan and Pakistan, they think that they have the right to rule. And so they don't recognize the legitimacy of the Taliban's Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, even though they share many points in common, ideologically and otherwise. In fact, the earliest iterations of the ISIS presence in Afghanistan and Pakistan were basically just a series of commanders who defected from the Afghan Taliban, the Pakistani Taliban for various reasons, to the ISIS camp and then basically got into conflict with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, by the way. So it's the Taliban and Al-Qaeda on one side and ISIS on the other. And so what we've seen in recent weeks is that the ISIS has conducted small-scale operations, mainly in Jalalabad and some other places against the Taliban. These are roadside bombs, IEDs that they've detonated under Taliban convoys. I would expect that sort of low-grade sort of attacks against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to continue. However, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda really are the big dogs in this fight, and they control the turf. They're the ones that took over the country, and I don't expect that the ISIS will be able to supplant them at all.
Bill, I read from the Wall Street Journal report, it's bloodthirsty, but it is a way of imagining what this contest looks like, given the non-transparency. The Taliban are working to choke any challenge, writes the Wall Street Journal, to their rule as they transition from a guerrilla-style insurgency to a government, said Saifullah Haroon, a Taliban intelligence officer in Zabul. We don't differentiate between Islamic State and Americans. For us, they are the same. Anywhere they rise up, we finish them. Mr. Haroon said he recently sought to arrest an Islamic State cleric in a village near Makrak, but failed and instead detained his son. He played down the threat now posed by the group. We killed all of them, he said about Islamic State fighters, but denied any involvement in the death of a Mullah Ibrahim. What is your measure, Bill, of the reporting coming out of Afghanistan? Islamic State has an effective media presence, and the Taliban is making remarks to the Wall Street Journal, which seems like they've been upgraded here for their media presence. How should we regard these single reports of we killed them all?
Yeah, I suspect that this Taliban intelligence officer saying he killed them all in his area, he may be correct. It's difficult to assess the viability of these reports, given the situation. The Taliban is very effective with Western reporters and showing them exactly what they want you to see. And you don't really, if you're a Western reporter embedded with the Taliban, so to speak, you don't really get to strike out and go and figure out the facts for themselves, go interview local residents in the area without a Taliban handler on your shoulder. So you're not going to get accurate quotes from individuals. Like, so for instance, this article you were talking about here, they have some residents there that are being quoted. They say things like, he must have done something, you know, or things like that. You know, he probably was a bad guy, but who knows what the local residents really thought about this one Taliban, or I'm sorry, this one Islamic State aligned cleric that was killed. So gathering the reporting is very difficult. I'm with Tom 100%. The Taliban are ascendant in this struggle. The Islamic State, we don't know what the numbers are. Thousands, could be 10,000. Who knows? But the Taliban is, you know, a lot of these Islamic State fighters were members of either the Afghan or Pakistani Taliban or of Al-Qaeda. And so they're very well known. So it's a matter of the Taliban going and rooting them out, of finding them and rooting them out of communities. I've maintained even before the fall of the Afghan government that when the Taliban turns its eye to rooting out the Islamic State, it would very likely have success in doing so, because, you know, as the Islamic State was there and taking shots at the Afghan government and U.S. soldiers and whatnot, it served a purpose for the Taliban. It destabilized the area, even if it did provide challenges to the Taliban regime. But now the Taliban can focus all of its efforts on rooting out the Islamic State. They know who many of them are. They know where they live. They know where they're operating. And, you know, the safe haven that existed for the Taliban in Pakistan, that's not the case for the Islamic State inside Pakistan. That safe haven has been key, both in Pakistan, which was primary, and maybe call it secondary or tertiary in Iran. The Islamic State has no such place to fall back to regroup. So the Taliban can grind them down over time.
Tom, your report some days past about the Islamic State's attack outside in Jalalabad, the capital of Nangarhar province. You include a still photo from what you report is a 17-second video showing an IED attack on a Taliban convoy. This is from the Amaq news agency. You've taught me over the years to pay attention to Amaq because it's a sophisticated operation attached to ISIS. Is this attack a one-off, or do we believe that ISIS has capabilities in some parts of the country that allow it to make an IED attack, and can they strike again like this?
You know, since I wrote that, John, there have been other small-scale attacks by ISIS against the Taliban in Afghanistan. So they have this low-grade ability to keep sniping at the Taliban, basically. But, you know, much of what the Taliban is going to do and Al-Qaeda is going to do in resistance to this and to put them down is not going to be publicized. I mean, we see some of it in the reporting in terms of them cracking down on the ISIS network, but I suspect there's a lot more going on along those lines than we even realize.
And the Jalalabad attack, that is the road to the Khyber Pass. That is the traditional exit and entrance of Pakistan, to Pakistan. Is ISIS also a threat to Pakistan, that close to the Pakistani government? Is it extending itself? As Bill says, ISIS doesn't have a natural sanctuary. Does that mean it's capable of striking against its neighbor?
Yeah, ISIS conducts regular attacks in Pakistan as well. They inherited some of the Pakistani Taliban's networks, which are intertwined with the Afghan Taliban, but the Pakistani Taliban is basically the arm of the Taliban Al-Qaeda nexus that is most responsible for attacking the Pakistani state. And they're much more prolific than ISIS is, but ISIS still has a presence and still has the ability to attack inside Pakistan. And, you know, one of the reasons why these attacks occurred in Jalalabad, John, we suspect, is that during the prison breaks that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda conducted during these offensive this year against the Afghan government, you know, a good number of ISIS guys got out of prison. So a lot of, you know, thousands of Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighters got out and some leaders. I suspect that also, you know, probably at least hundreds of ISIS guys got out as well. And one of those prison breaks occurred in Jalalabad, where ISIS had a presence. So I think they got some manpower back into the fold during those prison breaks.
Bill, you and Tom and your colleagues have had good communication with CENTCOM these many years of Afghanistan and Iraq, etc. Does CENTCOM continue to report on Afghanistan, or have they gone, have they moved in another direction?
Yes, CENTCOM isn't in Afghanistan anymore. The last reporting we had from CENTCOM was on the withdrawal and then the evacuation. So I haven't seen anything coming out of CENTCOM since August, I guess that would be 31st, when the U.S. withdrew, except for the reporting on the drone strike that killed the 10 Afghans in Kabul. That's the extent of the reporting from CENTCOM on Afghanistan. It's almost like Afghanistan has gone down the memory hole for CENTCOM. I think some individuals within the Department of Defense are quite happy with this result. Afghanistan has been a thorn in the side for the U.S. military. It's been a difficult presence. And, you know, Afghanistan going away is an issue, and CENTCOM getting to deal with issues that they much more prefer to do, with missions they prefer to do, is probably a good thing. I mean, there's really not much that CENTCOM can say about Afghanistan anymore, other than it played a major role in losing the war in Afghanistan, and that it's run by the Taliban.
And no comments on ISIS, which we know is a transnational threat. No comments on these ISIS events.
No, it's not something that the CENTCOM is going to concern itself with, particularly with Taliban, ISIS infighting.
Right.
The only thing where CENTCOM would deal with would be the over the horizon strikes, which really are over the rainbow strikes, that if they would have to execute them, or whether that would be CENTCOM or CIA. That's the only time where CENTCOM is really going to get involved here.
We're going to Syria. We're going to Syria with Tom. Tom, just a moment. We're going to go to Syria and your comment as well. Tom Joslin, Bill Rajo, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. They and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal and their conversation on their podcast, Generation Jihad, not only now, but in the weeks prior to these events, significant because they and their colleagues pick up on incidents that later on are lend themselves to interpretation across a large landscape. We're going to Syria next and Al-Qaeda. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.